When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Combi Album Book Club. We're having another comedy pizza party with our friends from Big Chick Energy. Big Chick Energy are a Toronto-based sketch comedy troupe consisting of friends of the podcast, Alicia Carrick and Emily Milling, as well as Julia Jones, Joanne Tacorda, and Sam Sexton. They joined me via Zoom to chat about Ali Wong's special, Baby Cobra. Ali Wong is an American-based comedian born in 1982, a San Francisco native who started her career in 2005. Her style is inspired by Chris Rock and would often touch on her experiences living in the city and as a young Asian woman with an honest lens of lived experience. Ali's resume is nothing if not impressive. While Baby Cobra was her breakout comedy special on Netflix, it was followed up with a second special, Hard Knock Wife, and her film Always Be My Maybe, produced with her friend Randall Park. But many aren't aware of her prolific career. In addition to the previously mentioned work, she has worked as a writer and story editor for Fresh Off the Boat, and holds 21 performance credits, has made multiple appearances as herself on Chelsea Lately, Hey Girl, and Best Week Ever, and not to mention being named one of 2011's 10 Comedians to Watch by Variety magazine. Baby Cobra was released in 2016 on Netflix and clocks in at about a tight 60 minutes. The entire special is just packed with energy and bravado that is inspiring to watch. Unfortunately, due to Netflix's not entirely transparent policies around ratings and viewer counts, it's a bit hard to tell you exactly how many people watched Baby Cobra, but it was a critical smash and with 100% critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes and an 81% audience score. Further, her continued success illustrates this special really was truly special. Last year, she released her book, Dear Girls, Intimate Tales, Untold Secrets, and Advice for Living Your Best Life. She's called it a life guide for her two young daughters, when they've got a little bit older. So grab a slice, sit back, and have fun while we talk about Ali Wong's Baby Cobra. So I want to welcome everybody to Comedy Album Book Club. This episode, I am joined by Joanne, Alicia, Emily, Julia, and Sam from Big Chick Energy. Thank you for joining us today.
Woo! Thank you for having us.
So we just watched Baby Cobra by Ali Wong, which is her first of two comedy specials that she has done. When we were talking about all of you coming on the show, we had a few ideas bounce around, like 30 Rock and a couple of other things. What made this one, this special, and Ali Wong sort of rise to the top and be what you selected?
I personally love it just because of her persona on stage. She's just no holds barred. She's crass and she does not apologize, which I really appreciate. Yeah. And I do feel like I always seek out comedians who are women or identify as women and who are women of color, just because that's a voice I feel like don't hear enough of. And I really appreciate this special because it just hits so hard and it's just such excellent writing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's a really good point about kind of like her stage presence and her charisma, because a lot of the jokes, like some of them are pretty out there, like they're pretty crass. And like coming from somebody else, I would be like, ugh. But coming from her, you're like, oh, she's just so likable. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show like how important that is in comedy.
I watched this special before I got into comedy, really, and it was like the first one where I was like, hey, this is like really like actually relatable to where I was in my life too. Like, we were around the same age going, I didn't have a child or anything, but like just the things that she was saying about like being over your 20s and like getting into like adult stuff, and I was like, that's funny. And like the stuff about third world moms hoarding was like, I was like, yes, that is my life. Like, that for sure is my life. So yeah. And I was watching Fresh Off the Boat at the time too, and it was like so funny, and I was like, this is awesome, obviously, because I was just like, I don't know, like growing up I didn't really think too much about representation, but then when I saw it, I was like, this is cool, I like it. So yeah, that was one of my favorite specials.
I hadn't seen the special until just now when we watched it, but I've watched her movie, Always Be My Maybe, like 5 billion times. Yeah. It's just the sweetest rom-com ever, and I love a good rom-com, and it's so very much like the type of female personality and character that I want to see more of, and she's hilarious in the first place. But also her work on Tuca and Birdie, and I didn't know until just now that she wrote on Fresh Off the Boat, and that is also a hilarious show. So so being a little bit of a noob to Ali Wong, except for maybe her movie that I've watched too many times, I really found that whole set so refreshing and relatable on so many levels.
Yeah,
she's very funny. She's a funny person.
I second that. She's a very funny person. That was my first time watching anything Ali Wong. Like, there's been a lot of comedy on Netflix, as we all know. It's kind of like our big source for a lot of it. Yeah. There's a lot of people that have numerous stand-ups as well, or at least specials, I guess, which is great. And I saw Ali Wong floating around on there, but there's just a lot of content you got to get through. And I feel like I've also just like taken a backseat to watching a ton of like comedy on Netflix specifically, but like this was such a breath of fresh air to watch, especially like taking such a long break from watching Netflix comedies, and just, I mean, pandemic related domestic sort of, new husband wife scenario that I'm in, and also like all the sex stuff, it's so real. It really is. And I just found that to be so like light but also very real, and still there's like there's a certain element of like the heaviness to it too, and the seriousness of just like how important it is that like she is out there saying these words, and it's so nice to watch, and just fun. She's fun on stage.
Awesome.
Delightful.
Now, so I know a few of you, this was your first exposure. Everybody's, well, and Emily, your first exposure was Always Be My Maybe. But was this everybody else's first entry into Ali Wong and her comedy?
No, I watched Hard Knock Wife. Is that it? The second special? When that came out, and I thought it was really funny, and then I also saw the movie, and then yeah, this is her first special, which I kind of went backwards, but yeah,
I think I watched Fresh Off the Boat first, and then I was like, oh, she's also doing this thing, and I was like, okay, And I think Netflix was new to me at the time too, so I was like, oh, let's see what's on here.
I gotta watch some more of her stuff. She's great.
It's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that it's interesting how she's pregnant in both specials.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read somewhere that, like, I don't know if she actually did it on purpose, but it made it sound like she did it on purpose, where she said she wanted to, like, if doing the first special, she, it kind of, like, blew up her career, she wanted to associate that success with her child, because a lot of female comedians, after they have kids, they just kind of disappear.
Yeah.
So she didn't want it to be the same for her. Mm-hmm.
I saw her live when she came to Toronto for Just for Laughs.
Yeah.
A couple years ago. And she was pregnant, and I guess that was around the same time when she was also filming.
She recorded it at the Winter Garden.
Okay.
So I was there for the second night of the show. Like, I first saw her on at midnight, and I was like, oh, she's hilarious, because even then, in this like really confined, she dominated that panel, because she's just like, her voice is so distinct, and so she's like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna let a bunch of Chris Hardwick's friends tell me what to say on the stage. This is my platform, you guys just fucking roll with it. So that's when I first saw her. But then I saw the special, and we at JFL 42 like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. She was performing two nights. First night was at the Winter Garden, and it was recording. Then the second night, they were like saying they might do some pickups at the Sony Center at the time.
Yeah, that's where I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, oh, is this a bit? Because her first special, she was pregnant, and it didn't really she didn't tap into it in quite the same way. And the second special, so it's like, oh, is she just doing a thing now? But then it's like, no, she's actually pregnant. So yeah,
I also thought it was fake. I was like, is she going to say something? And then she never did.
Yeah, and it was interesting, the dynamic too. Like, there's a lot of material that's cut from the Hard Knock Life special that was local. Obviously they're not going to have the Toronto material in there, but also about the audience, because there is a very diverse audience that this audience was not, like, watching the shots of the audience in this special, it's like, that's a really white San Francisco crowd, which was like, it was interesting, because like that kind of sort of, I find her material is very accessible, mainly because it touches on so many different vectors of funny. And like, you know, she's got, for me, it's like it's like she can touch every group. Like, for like middle-class white people like me, it's like the hippie shit. It's like, she's like going on hikes and all this crap. And I'm like, feel like I'm a white person pretending to be Asian. And it's just like, you know, the like, oh, she does the same things as me. Like, that's this super middle class crap that we do. So it's like, oh, there's a point of reference for everybody. But then she's got like, I fucked skater dudes and stuff. So like,
wait, that's not a point of reference for everyone? What?
But how do you all find, sort of like, is there a point that you really find resonates with you? Like, I know, Joanne, you talked about how you were going through a lot of similar experiences. Like, what about her material really you feel lines up?
There were so many skater boys.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. There was so much. Like, I already mentioned, like, the mom thing, like, just keeping things. Just as her description of, like, Asian men, I guess. Like, I don't relate because I'm not... Yeah, I'm not, I don't relate as much, because I was joking on the chat that, like, I'm not attracted to Asian men, probably because every time I met an Asian person, they were, like, my family as a child, so I've just always been like, no, cannot be attracted to you, my cousin, so we'll just keep a distance, but just like that, and I appreciated, though, that she was, like, standing up for Asian men, too. I feel like they don't get enough credit for, like, being, like, cool and sexy and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that... Yeah, I don't know, just, and, like, when she was talking about like not being young anymore, I guess, and like your body changing, I was like, yes, you might not see it, but I feel it. I feel the change.
And the rest of you, where do you?
I mean, I did say the skater boy thing, but in truth, I really, really appreciated when she started talking about miscarriages, because it is totally true. And I was looking at my Facebook memories today, and it was like 12 years ago now that I had an ectopic pregnancy, which resulted in a ridiculous amount of surgery. But it's like, it was shitty at the time, but it's not something I haven't been able to get over. And I think it is really important for more people to talk about mm-hmm. having miscarriages, and that it is like a really big part of life. I know she's right. Like, I know a bunch of people who've had them, but we never talk about it. We never talk about it in like a comedy way. Obviously, well, for obvious reasons, like it's a very devastating process, but I really, really appreciated that she brought up her miscarriage, and she didn't sweep it under the rug, but she mm-hmm. she called it out and said, like, we must talk more about it. But also, oh my God, the relief that comes along with it, you know? It's different for everybody, right? But I think that really stuck out to me in the whole grand scheme of the whole thing, that and the skater boys. Mm-hmm. And it was an Asian boyfriend, a Chinese boyfriend, that provided me with such a seed that would totally blast through my plan B. So, like, I'm like, I really relate to Ali Wong.
Yeah. And was he like a dolphin?
He was like a dolphin. I was like fucking a dolphin. He was really into butt stuff, too. Like, I don't know. Like everything she said, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I get that. Uh-huh. Yeah, 20s, my 20s, yeah. Mm. That's basically it.
The universal themes, Matt.
Yeah,
butt stuff. Yeah, butt stuff.
She's able to make it so funny, and just like everyone's thinking it too, like especially around like the butt stuff part. And you know, there's a lot of women in the audience that are probably feeling like, oh, I might actually relate. But like, yeah, you can relate. Yeah, you tried something new, and she talks about it with such strength and confidence that you're just like, yeah, Ali Wong, like you're mm-hmm. speaking my language, and thank you.
It's not weird.
And one of the things that I really love about her, in every time that I've seen her, in every performance or writing job that I've seen her work on, is there's a shamelessness to her material. And I mean, a lot of people use shameless as a bad thing, but I think being shameless is a good thing, because it's like you're not like scared or afraid of your history, and it's an ownership. And I find that in a lot of her material, like the like how she addresses her sexuality in her 20s, and even in the, like with the sleeping with the homeless people jokes that she did, it would have been so easy for her to punch down, but she didn't, and it was like she aimed it at herself in a self-deprecating way that didn't make, like, it was like the guy was hot. That's why she slept with him. It's like, it's Urban Outfitters' fault. It's not his fault. And even like the tag, like that, the when she goes, like, she tags it with twice that she slept with a homeless guy. And it's just sort of like, oh God. So yeah, I mean, do you find that shameless, like just basically being willing to own your experience is useful in comedy?
Yes, I think my favorite part of Ali Wong is that she's confident with her storytelling and her persona, but she also doesn't like dumb herself down. I do feel like that's a little bit of a thing with female comedians who are just like, yeah, I just like wandered in the bathroom and then I shit myself, whatever. I don't know. That's a terrible example. But, you know, she's just like, this is my plan. This is what I'm doing. And here's why. Like, she just lays it all out there. These aren't happenstances, some of the things she's talking about. She's like, I locked his ass down for this reason. I made his lunch every day for this reason. I love how calculated she is.
Yeah.
Storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's so many female comics that are like so self-deprecating, like what's her name? I can't think of her right now. That's fine and it's funny, but like sometimes it gets old, right? And she's not like that at all, which is like quite refreshing.
Be hard to watch when someone's just kind of punching themselves down.
Yeah.
And just like, oh man, how much is left?
Yeah. I have another friend who, she's not in the comedy world, but she went out and that is that she saw a woman comic who was doing that. And she's like, I just don't want to come out. She's that turned her off of comedy entirely because of that sort of that self-deprecating voice that, that so many people have to lean on. And particularly a lot of women comics have been forced to lean into that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just own it.
And
throw the shoulders back.
The other thing that I would say that is nice is she touches on like even some kind of like political topics or like for instance when she's talking about the you know how she has to go to like when her husband accompanies her to the doctor's appointments and it's like, oh my gosh, like he's such a good husband and father and like how men don't have to do a lot to be seen as like, you know, amazing compared to women who, you know, may make some small parenting mistakes and it's like you're the worst mom. But the way the way she talks about it is just, I don't know, it's just very kind of like matter of fact and approachable. Like it's not, you're not kind of like, oh, this is like, it's enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She really heightens it, I think, with the whole, like, I am here to be a housewife, you know, like in one moment, she's like, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And then the second moment, she's like, she's really undercutting, like she's just calling it out and parodying the whole idea of being a stay-at-home mom, because she's clearly not, obviously. She has a very like ambitious career path that she's gone through already. But I think she like, she's also giving people permission to be like, yeah, no, I don't want to just only be ambitious all the time. Like I would like to just lie on the floor for a while, maybe.
Yeah.
I really like that about it too.
Yeah, that everybody, you should have a choice to do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should have a choice to have an extremely rich Harvard grad husband with $70,000 in debt. Sure.
Oh, but it was beautiful at the end. How did he bamboozle me?
Yeah.
I thought she put the word bamboozled into her set like 2-3 times.
Yeah. Now, like, one of the things, too, I love about her material is, like, it's joke dense on multiple levels. Like, if you were to listen to this, it would be a funny album. Because it's joke dense verbally, but there's these act outs that she does where she uses her physicality as well, where it's like the faces that she pulls or like the point when she like, it's like she's a guy and the girl trying to do the butt stuff. He's like, no, and like reaching behind or lying on the floor with her legs up for the post-coital draining kind of thing. It's just like, she really feels masterfully in control of every element of her set that I find
and
really
the fact
impressive.
That she's pregnant doing all of these things too. And that she is being like sexual even when she's pregnant. Like she's not this like very virginal pregnant woman, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, innocent, like super innocent, like how we are trained to think of pregnant people.
Yeah.
She's still
and sexy. It makes her sexier.
Yeah. like in a very tight dress.
I know.
Yeah.
Again, owning it.
I think just the stance she has on stage, she just kind of knows how ridiculous she looks with this giant bump and this tight little dress and just has this little hip cocked out. Yeah. So it's just like, what's up?
And she's like bent over like a 90 degree majority of the time too. It's great.
Now she has a really distinct voice. Like I feel like watching this special and then watching her other roles, like in BoJack Horseman, Inside Amy Schumer, like all of these different, like she was on Are You There, Chelsea for a while. And actually she's also in a show called American Housewives, or Housewife as a housewife. So she gets to play one on TV.
That's not a reality show, is it?
No. It's a sitcom. It's a pretty by the book sitcom, which is like that's a weird choice, but at the same time, it's like, well, she wants her mortgage money, so she spent $70,000 getting her Harvard grad
husband out of debt, so I understand doing that. But I feel like her voice carries through to all of her projects. Like if you watch Fresh Off the Boat, Constant Wu's Jessica sounds a lot like her. And the main character, her character in Always Be My Maybe, also sounds a lot like her. How important is it to, do you think, to preserve, like, is, what's the balance that you guys find in preserving your individual voice when doing comedy versus like giving into the bit or giving into the larger ensemble?
Yeah, I think you have to pick and choose. I think there's, because like when you're doing comedy or theater or whatever, for me the goal is to always entertain. So whatever I'm doing, it's like, what will make this the most entertaining? That being said, when you're someone like Ali Wong and it's just you on stage, you need to be yourself. And what is your perspective that is unique? And I was watching James Corden with my mom a couple nights ago, and Alison Brie was one of the guests. And she was talking about how apparently Disney was developing a She-Hulk series and they were looking for an Alison Brie type. And she said, I didn't know I was a type. I was always auditioning for like Anne Hathaway types and things like that. So to finally be a type, that's like, you're in. You fucking made it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my take on it. So be yourself, because there's no one else like you, kid.
But it's true. And then like, we're obviously working in a group. It's just finding a nice balance between all of it, right? But you wanting everyone to be, and in the words of Emily Richardson, be your best self of whatever that comedy brand or whatever it is, whatever your brand of comedy is.
Bring and that to the table. I think it helps you be more like authentic and real in whatever you're doing. Like, you have to know yourself for it to be believable and like relatable to people. Mm-hmm. So like, having, even if you're playing a character, there's got to be something that like is resonating in you that makes it authentic and believable as a character.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're just faking it all the time, I mean, like before we all kind of started working together, like a year and a half ago, it was really hard for me to put on any sort of like actual Emily into anything, and I was like, I must put on fake Emily all the time, because people aren't gonna like the real Emily. And and so I think having examples like Ali Wong just being themselves is incredibly helpful to letting other people be themselves as well. Because like, you can't really do that until you like spend time working on this process, right, and working on this craft. And understanding what your voice is, because it's like, you can't, it doesn't just like happen unless you're like constantly doing it. So yeah, that's a roundabout way of saying what I said earlier, which was just that she makes it easy to be yourself. Yeah. when you're looking for role models.
I think in terms of a group, when you're working with a group, it is important to find the right personalities to surround yourself with, because they will bring out the best aspects of you or help you find aspects of your personality that will enhance the group. Like, I think we all work really, really well together because we're all generally nice people, but we all have our own little quirks and we kind of just build off on that. And I do find I do act slightly different when I'm with other people or in certain groups, because that's the role I feel like I need to be. But when I'm with these guys, I'm like, oh, I can be insane. This is excellent.
Yeah, like, we totally removed any reason to be embarrassed about anything. I feel like we've talked about poop so much at this point that there's nothing else.
We had the doo-doo bits.
But that one sketch from your show, the warrior sketch, I was like, whoa! it was hilarious. And yeah, it was kind of Ali Wong-y in that it was there. And it was just like, stop being dicks about this. Like, just get your head on straight. It's just a little blood. Like, it was just so funny.
It's about period blood. You have to say it's about period blood.
It was about period blood.
Julia wrote that. Yeah. It's such a funny, such a well-written sketch. And it was so fun to play with that sketch and like find little character nuances in the whole thing. It was really great.
Yeah. And one of the things I find really interesting about Ali Wong's special, this one in particular, I mean, she goes super dark in so many levels. I mean, about race and gender and the power dynamics, mm-hmm. like these really heavy topics, but she keeps it light at the same time. Like, she talks about poop a lot, for example, and various permutations. But like the lifting the leg for the soft serve, and she never once calls it shit. Like, she's like doo doo poop, and it's just like that keeps it at it. Like, by not saying that word, it changes how the entire topic is addressed, because it keeps it like at this level in a way that I find really interesting. And like, how do you like balance? Like, what do you do to balance that? That darkness to light, that funny to serious, to get that core of like really interesting meat out while keeping it sort of fun and light.
Well, I am naturally an awkward person, I've been told. So when things get a little serious, I tend to do like weird, I don't know, I even introduce myself weirdly. Like, so sometimes it is like a coping mechanism not to like get too dark. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it is what it is.
I would think, like, with the doo-doo, like, if it, I don't know, like, I think I probably swear more in my real life than I do in, like, comedy-related things. Like, I'm a big, as you know, Matt, like, a Gaffigan fan, and with the doo-doo jokes and, like, so many different permutations of the doo-doo joke, it reminds me of, like, a Jim Gaffigan horse joke, or that, you know, and, but... Yeah, like calling it doo-doo as opposed to shit. Like, if it doesn't need to be there, like, we don't have to go crass in, like, terms of vulgar language. Then you appeal, I don't know, to a broader audience. It's almost like a G or PG rated sex talk among, you know, the most vulgar speaking people. It just doesn't, it's a nicer way to go about it sometimes. And it's a little lighter. It makes it less of a, you know, taboo subject.
Yeah.
Makes it less uncomfortable or like crass, kind of like a little cutesy bit.
Yeah,
it takes a power away from the crap, and you can just do whatever you want with it. It just makes it so silly and like accessible to everybody.
Yeah,
which kind of what I originally thought of when you asked your question, Matt, was my writing instructor from Second City named Joel Buxton. He talked about how, I think it was an Onion article where they were trying to address all the, in New York City, how everyone's being stopped and frisked, like that new policy from the New York police. So they called it Stop and Kiss, and like, they just changed the name, but everybody knew what this article was talking about. So you just like kind of put in a different framework. It just kind of lets you look at it a certain way and makes people not afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I think that's also what she did, was just like when she was talking about her miscarriage, like, yes, this is this awful thing, but in my mom's world, it's like losing a pair of shoes, her words exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, recontextualizing things so that you can understand it from a totally different point of view. And so much of writing is about point of view. So, I think it's really fascinating to hear hers and apply it to my own writing. The end of that statement.
Period.
Period.
Now, she said she, and I can, it's interesting. She said she was inspired and kind of mentored by Chris Rock, and her dynamics on stage, she doesn't sound like Chris Rock, but there's, Chris Rock owns the stage when he's on it. He like just prowls that stage like a person who knows, this is my house. You can come in and I'm going to just show you a good time. And I feel that she's very much the same way in that regard. And I think that it's just that again, shamelessness and ownership of the comedic voice. Are there any comedians that you can think of that she kind of reminds you of, or you feel like they have not necessarily similarities, but they kind of resonate with her material?
Thinking.
Only because you mentioned how she uses the stage. I think of Mike Birbiglia, and he's less stand-up and more storytelling, but when it's so funny because he's just kind of like a softer spoken guy and he's not so physical, but when he speaks, you're just so immersed in the story he's telling, you forget about all the empty space around him.
Yeah.
Like, it's really impressive. So, like, definitely that use of space, but also the way he uses his voice, because that's just storytelling. But I love the way that Ali Wong uses her voice, because, yeah, she does the yelling, like, I need to lock him down. But she also will get really close to the mic and say, this is how you do it. Listen to me. I'm a genius. Like, just how she goes up and down. It's so effective.
Yeah, it sounds like she's got everybody sort of wrapped around her finger, and you can see the control in her eyes too. And just her pacing as she goes across, and she's like, and now I'm coming in. And it's just it's a very in control, like, powerful stance that she takes. I kind of like Chappelle in a way will do that too. You know, he's just like, you're all waiting for what I'm going to say. And trust me, it's going to be good. Well worth it.
Like, there's a couple of comedians that I think, like, when I watch her material, it kind of reminds me in a way of, like, a progression of their material, and that's Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers. And how, especially in how she speaks about her husband, in that, like, oh, he's my delightful goof kind of way that she locked down, and she's got it. And actually, in her, Joanne, you'd probably remember that, but in the second show, she had him selling merch.
Yeah.
So I actually bought a poster from him. Yeah. He made, so I'm like, I've met Ali Wong's husband.
That's a brush on purpose. She's like, go meet him and buy the merchandise.
Yeah. That was, she used it as a selling factor too. And it was like, that is so multi-layered and clever. But yeah, like, you know, when Phyllis Diller would talk about Fang, or when Joan Rivers would talk about Edgar, it was loving, but also, oh, this guy's just such a schmo. Like, just such a dummy that I got, like, I incepted him, and he's doing exactly what I'm the boss. And it's just like, I feel it kind of carries that forward into a more modern context. And that's something I love, because I have podcasts talking about comedy history. So it's like history where there's, like, there's a lineage there that I find really delightful.
What I liked about her talking about her husband, though, is when she, like, turned around on herself that she was a sucker for paying $70,000. So it kind of puts them on even ground, because, like, she's sort of, like, berating him, like she says, like, in her special, like, but he's in on the joke, like, too. So it's not like she's being, like, mean to him.
Yeah.
Like, which I thought was a clever way to, like, bring it back and, like, put, you know, equal it out again.
Yeah.
Learning lessons.
Yeah.
It's like the new comedy of the future.
Yeah, I read that he likes her now to run jokes by him that involve him.
I since I started doing stand-up, I will run my bits by Heather, and she's like, you don't mention my name. And I'm like, look, I'm just, like, mentioning that, you know, because it's weird to say my wife. I'm not, like, Borat or something. I'm just like, do you want me to make up a fake name? Like, my wife, Alexandra. I don't know. Like, so yeah. But it's one of those funny things where you have to, your partner is such a part of your life and experience. You need they have to be a part of them. If you're ignoring that, you're ignoring comedy gold. But at the same time, you don't want to, like, make them feel weird. You know, you don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. And even when she's, like, being, like, poking at him, there's still a lot of poking back at herself. It never feels mean-spirited or unequal in how she's distributing it.
She speaks about it like, the whole top of the bit is, this was my whole plan. And everything that I've done up until this point has been by my accord. So, like, you know, she might be, like, punching down, like, a little bit, but it is balanced still.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And then just, I love the lack of fucks she has. Like, like, just, like, the stuff, like, when she's talking about, like, again, you know, on so many things, like when she calls out the coworker for giving her crap about being late, and it's like, well, I've heard you shit. or when she talks about like the moistness and stuff, where it's just like, oh boy.
But I love that too, because she was then to smell your fingers to be like, gotta make sure everything's okay. But it's just like such a thing that, you know, it's a weird thing to see someone do for sure. But you're also I know, the last time I checked for a foul smell in a meeting. Yeah. But it makes me not so scared to do that bathroom stall sketch we talked about. Remember that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And we talked at great lengths about our worst bathroom stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sure we will again. Like the time I got trapped in a bathroom and the boss that I really hated was there and like talking to him, I was like sobbing in the corner of this bathroom stall. And she's talking to this other woman, I don't know, for like 45 minutes or something. And I'm stuck there for 45 minutes listening to her talk. And I'm still there. And the other woman leaves, and my boss gets into the stall next to me, takes big hairy fucking shit, and then leaves. It doesn't even wash her hands. And like, this is before COVID, okay? Like, she didn't wash her motherfucking hands. Bathroom stories.
Stay tuned. BCE got a lot of shit on the way.
Yeah.
Do you all have like a favorite bit from the special? Like, is there one that stands out that's like, oh, that's just genius?
There are times where I'll like just jokingly try to like reach for Wes's butthole, like not even doing sex. Just general, like he could just be doing the dishes and I'll just like go in for a little and he just goes, ah! And so that reaction from her, I'm just like, yes, right? Like,
yeah, why do they jump so high when we try to touch their buttholes? It's bizarre.
I know, doesn't see it coming.
I always go back to the mom wanting to hold on to the calculator instructions. Because I remember those calculators and they were like torture for me, and I never really understood why I was like graphing things and the problems they would give me. So like that worked for me, the fact that she was like fighting with her mom to like hold onto them, and like just the stuff that I have found in my own house that I cannot like get rid of because it's so like embedded in me that I might need these things one day. Like that, I think, because it was so early on in the show too, and when I first saw it, I was like, yes, like she gets me, I get this. Yeah. That was my favorite bit.
Yeah, that really resonated with me too. And I mean, my mother is not from a third world country, but she hoards things like anything. And so, yeah, I can actually picture my high school calculator in this cupboard in my parents' house with like tons of other shit packed in there from my whole childhood that is still there and she will not get rid of. And I fight every day to not be like that.
Yeah.
Purge.
Marie Kondo that shit.
Yeah. Trying.
Which is a thing I noticed right off the bat is that when she was referencing her Kindle, she referenced Marie Kondo's book, Tidying Up, before any of us up north knew what the hell that was.
Yes.
Oh,
so
nice.
Ahead of the curve. And I'm like, Netflix.
Inspiration.
Just full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle Netflix.
It's a cult.
Yeah.
Now, are there any comedians that you think, like, she has a very powerful energy and that ownership of material? Like, there's a couple of, it's funny, Sammy, you mentioned Amy Schumer, because I kind of feel like there is a similarity there, but Amy Schumer is much hackier in how she does it. I mean, there are Amy Schumer bits I enjoy, and like putting aside the allegations of joke theft and everything, but I find she does a similar kind of material, but it's just not as refined, even to the point where she did her special while pregnant. And I was like, you're ripping off Ali Wong right now. You're just totally stealing that. But then on the other end of the spectrum, there's Emily Heller, who I find super freaking hilarious, again, because of the no fuck attitude of like, this is me, just suck it up and buckle up because I'm going to be funny. So is there anybody that stands out in any of your minds, like sketch or stand up, like any kind of comedian or comedic performer that you kind of feel has that similar kind of vibe?
Yeah, I think Chelsea Peretti like jumps to mind immediately. And like all of the writing that she's done on sitcoms, but then also her specials and then her podcast, her super weird podcast where she has people call her on Skype and then she kind of yells at them for a while.
Unsolicited advice.
I don't know. I don't know if it's still going, but she used to do this like ages ago. But like she, even like her character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I feel like is so similar to the special that she put out however many years ago, where it is just like, you must accept who I am and I don't care if you don't. The end. It's not necessarily like I don't give a fuck, because like they do care, they really do care, but what they care about is that they are true to themselves, I think. Yeah. I think there's a really clear distinction that you have to make there, that like I could say all the time like I don't give a fuck, but I have learned in therapy that that's a coping mechanism, and I do give a fuck. But what I know I care about, and what I think I resonate with these women, is that they don't care whether other people accept them for who they are or not, because they know that they accept themselves. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about like Mindy Kaling too. Like, mm-hmm. I find her and Ali Wong are sort of similar, just that they're really both really opinionated, have like similar, like, I think upbringings, I'm not really sure, but like just the way, because they are both strong and they like have a big ego. But it's like in a funny way where they also like blurt out their insecurities and they're like not afraid to say it, which I love about them, because it just makes it, I don't know, like just like funny. Like I know that I'm my own hero, but also I have all these flaws, but that's what makes me like unique and cool.
Yeah. Oh my God, Joanne, I love that you say you're your own hero. And it just makes me think of the video we made of you singing to yourself.
I'm Joanne.
I want everyone to see it. Oh, it's the best video I think I've ever helped anyone make ever in my life.
Oh, you gotta link to that.
Every birthday I will watch that. Yes. I took a survey the other day about like my personality, and it like told me all these things. And when I feel like really good, it's like when I like know my personality and how I perceive myself all aligned. But I took this like quiz and it told me that I was like the best ever, and I was like, damn straight I am.
Oh yeah. Yes. Reinforcement. Yes. But very true.
So I feel like Ali Wong and Mindy, they have this like that, like it comes together and you can feel it. It's like magical.
And she's not on it, like she, to that point, like she's on an even ground with her audience. You know, it's not like I'm up here, you're down there. Like we're like status is straight up. We're people, and I'm just happen to have a microphone. I'm gonna tell you the nitty gritty about my butt, his butt, everyone's butt, and doo doo. You know, and you're just like, yeah, you're real. You really get it.
any other comedians that you guys can think of, or
in terms of personality and also in their set talking about what it's like to be an older woman, it would be Leslie Jones. I really enjoyed her recent special, and just in everything she does. I love her Instagram, especially when the Olympics are on.
Yes.
And she discovers curly and can't stop talking about the pants. I love it. She was also a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race last season, and even though she's a judge, she's on the panel and they're filming everything, she is still blatantly recording everything with her phone and just like, yes! Like, she just does not care.
Yeah.
Well, she's like, I'm excited.
Yeah. Like, what I love about her,
what she could do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, with her, she's like an older person who, like, hit it big. Like, she's 45, 46? Like,
she's 52. Older.
52, yeah. Okay. Wow. So yeah, like, she was, like, in her mid-40s when her career blew up. And she'd been slogging away for decades. And so that she's like enjoying every moment of it, like being able to do panels about like Game of Thrones, because she fucking loves Game of Thrones. So she's going to talk to Seth Meyers about Game of Thrones on his show. Cool. And so I love that about her too.
Free reign at that point.
Like, she wore knee brace in her special. Like... Like, I'm tired.
Tiffany Haddish is very much like that too in her book.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any of her specials, but I've read her book and seen her movies, because she makes me laugh and so I will watch them for infinity. But she doesn't, she's also very much a, like, I am who I am and accept it and move on.
Yeah.
Because I'm having a great time.
She talks about, she had this one performance where it just totally bombed, like, yes, for whatever reason. And she just, like, she doesn't pretend it didn't happen. And in that moment, she's just like, she just owned it and enjoyed it and stuff. So yeah, it's like she has that like, this is my experience. Mm-hmm. It just makes, it adds to the flavor of life. And that's why, like, all of these people we're talking about, I find it, that seems to be like a recurring theme, is like, just embrace it all, because it all, mm-hmm, it's all worth sort of celebrating in a, mm-hmm, different way.
Mm-hmm. Are there any comedians, like female comedians or women identifying comedians, that aren't like that?
I think
one comedian I thought was it Beth Stelling or Elizabeth Stelling?
Beth Stelling.
Yeah, I like her so much. Like, she's not the biggest personality on stage, but she's very down to earth. She talks about her experiences and how ridiculous they are, but she doesn't beat herself down like a lot of other female comedians that we've talked about too. I feel like she's a gem. She's one of my favorites.
Well, check out the Comedy Album Book Club episode where we first discussed Simply the Beth, and then the follow-up episode where I interview her. Yeah, telephone.
On it.
Yeah, lucky devil. Yeah, I mean, I kind of think, like, there's a couple of comedians, and I don't want to name names that I've seen, because they're smaller profile and stuff. And I don't want to be like throwing shade at people who I like, but like where I've seen them in real life or seen them online, where it's like it's self-deprecatory without the uplifting component. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, if we every time I go to talk about this goddamn special, I forget the name, Nanette. In Nanette, that's sort of the gist of it, of like, oh, we have to tear ourselves down to make ourselves seem funny. And I mean, I think you see that more in like insult comedy, or like, there's like the
Hannah Gadsby?
Hannah Gadsby for Nanette, but that sort of like roast world where it's sort of like there's a negativity that just runs through the comedians. So Whitney Cumming.
Elena Glazier, too.
Yeah, like they're both people that I enjoy, but it's like I like them now more once they got past that. But when their earlier stuff, there was that negativity there that I think they're still finding that balance. I think it's a phase that a lot of, I think
all age too, and like going through experiences, maturing and stuff.
Yeah. Like, every comedian has to figure out their voice. And I think for the, mm-hmm, I mean, you chase the laugh, especially in stand up where there's literally, it's like you and Mike in the audience. So there's not that buffer there. So you have to like, what's the easy laugh? And it's that struggle between, you know, endearing yourself and what's going to make people laugh. Oh, if you tear yourself down, because that makes them feel that, oh, you don't take yourself too seriously, then I'm going to like you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a, culturally, I think there's a, and you could all speak to this better than I could, but there's that sort of cultural pressure for women and people who identify as women to like not step up. And like not to put themselves, like, because it's like the stereotype of bossy, like talk about, you can't say bossy, or all this stuff, like and that's discussed in Lean In, which she discusses in there. So yeah, I think it all sort of plays through that. I don't know. That's my rumination.
Sure, just saying, for sure.
Yeah.
And like, as the comedian, if that's the way you're doing comedy or going through that phase, it like must get tiring to think of other negative stuff, and then you would attract that also as your audience, you know, and like, mm-hmm, I don't know if it's a shift, but the sort of like unwavering confidence, like, yo, I'm telling you my story, this is what's up, people flock to that. I find it's just true honesty and storytelling, and people can relate to or want to be at least in the presence of maybe a little more positivity. And I think Ali Wong totally encapsulates all of that. And there's a ton of comedians like her. And it's just like, that's so nice. Like, you want to be in a space that is welcoming.
I think, you know, like, as a society, we're also kind of evolving in the type of media that we consume and the type of advertising we consume too, right? Like, there was a time where you could say, like, buy this sugar because it is good for growing children and babies. And, like, that is no longer the case. People aren't stupid, dumb, dumb idiots. Like, we're well-informed about a lot of things. And, you know, Alicia, to your point about people are flocking to that type of energy, I think it is not just the positivity, but it's the honesty and the authenticity of what people are bringing to the table now. Because, like, if you're just... So, like, I had a really shitty experience with Jim Jeffries. He's a fucking shithead. I watched his special, and this is why I don't watch a lot of comedy specials. I watched it, and I was like, this is a fucking sexist piece of garbage shit, and I tweeted that, and I tagged him, because I was like, a half a bottle of wine in, and I was like, fuck you. And then he sent his goddamn motherfucking minions on me, and, like, I woke up the next day to a shitstorm on Twitter of a bunch of men yelling at me, telling me to get back in the kitchen, you fat, ugly, cunt, whore.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Trolls.
I'm like, well, okay, so you have proven my point, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still. Just like, wow, way to go out of your way.
So seriously, though.
I just watched the Taylor Swift
Miss Americana.
Yeah. And it was so good. And it's kind of like her story of, like, being that, like, quiet, like, taught to be polite girl, to, like, learning, educating herself, and then, like, unlearning, like, patriarchy, and starting, like, learning that it's okay to stand up for yourself and don't apologize, and I think that is so great, and that's what I meant by, like, you know, you're maturing, you're going through these experiences, and, like, you also know that you don't want to take it anymore, like, that's enough, like, I've had enough of this, and, like, I have my own personality and life, this is, like, not okay that you're doing certain things. I feel like Ali Wong, in her special, she sort of joked about that when she was saying, like, colonizing the colonizer and, like, crushing the patriarchy and all that kind of stuff. But I think that kind of comedy to me is refreshing, and, like, because it isn't punching down, it's also, like, showing, like, the mechanisms of, like, the patriarchy or, like, the systems that we're in a, like, a funny way and a way that we can understand.
Educational.
Yeah.
As well as funny. It truly is. Like, I'm learning.
Okay, so last question. I'll sort of work my way around the ring, sort of closing thoughts kind of thing. Would you recommend this special, and do you think it's an important special? So we'll start with you, Joanne, since you're the first in the rotation there.
I think it is an amazing special. It's the one comedy special, I think, that really awakened, like, a comedy thing in me. Like, seeing her, obviously, as an Asian person being funny, like, also, like, born in, like, North America, like, she has that voice, but it's also, I don't know, just, like, so good, and she's around our age, like, as I already mentioned, around my age. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend it to each and every person, especially if you want to understand me.
Alicia, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I highly, highly recommend. Everyone should see it. I think for me personally, watching that, it was inspiring and motivating to just continue to find that voice. Like, I don't know if I've found my voice in comedy or we're always working towards that, but it was certainly an example of someone that keeps trying. And I don't know a ton of her other works and writing background, but, like, certainly we'll be diving in now. So that was a tipping point. So thank you for nominating that Netflix special.
Julia?
Oh, absolutely. I was one of the ones that wanted to watch this originally. I did forget just how much she talks about poop in this and how crass it can be. So I will keep that in mind if I ever recommend it to someone. But I think in terms of performance and writing, it's one of the strongest, and it's always stuck out in my mind. So it's A++ for me in regards to comedy special.
Excellent. And Sam.
Me.
Yes.
Yes, I would. I would wholeheartedly recommend it. I think. I mean, for all the reasons we talked about, it's accessible for a lot of different people. I think a wide range of people will find it funny. I think for women, there's a lot of relatable things, but I was watching a bit of it last night and Dylan was laughing. Obviously you liked it, Matt. So, yeah, if I had to choose one, like I found the start wasn't like paying off funny for me. Like I kind of had to get into it a bit. And, so I would say like maybe stick with it a little bit. My only thing was, yeah, maybe like the first 5-10 minutes weren't laugh out loud for me. But overall, I thought it was great.
Awesome. And Emily?
Yeah, I would 100% recommend it. I'm fairly certain Ali Wong will not send a bunch of evil people after you on Twitter if you talk shit about her. And you shouldn't, because she's very funny.
She'll also just come after you herself. It's fine.
Probably, yeah.
Just knocking on your door.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd be like, oh, it worked. My plan worked. I bamboozled you, Allie.
Here's my spec script.
Yeah.
I win.
Show.
Oh, my God, yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much for being on the show. And is there anything that you guys want to plug or tell people about?
Yes, when does this come out, Matt?
This is going to be coming out next month. Well, June. Sorry, it'll be coming out in June.
Okay, so as of now, we have already premiered our new music video, Spanx, and you can find it as long as it has not been taken down by the good people at the Spanx Corporation by this time. But we could send you a secret link. Julia and I made a music video from a sketch we wrote in... There's a siren in the background. When we were in the writing program at Second City, and so we are announcing and launching that on Friday, May 8th, which is way before this came out. So go watch it on our YouTube channel and subscribe to Big Chick Energy on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube.
And our website, Big Chick Energy Sketch.
That is another place to find us.
Excellent. Great. Well, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having us, Matt!
Wonderful host.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.